Did you know that Virginia is the birthplace of American whiskey? Well, they've been making it there since 1607, and Catoctin Creek has been honoring that tradition of small craft rye whiskey since 2009. Virginia grain, Virginia water, and Virginia barrels. Catoctin Creek, the Virginia rye whiskey. This is brought to you by Smooth Ambler, a proud member of the Bourbon Pursuit family. Smooth Ambler builds on the traditional roots of American whiskey through innovative blends, proudly sourced whiskeys, and a unique line of their own homemade bourbon and rye recipes made in West Virginia. So venture off the traditional trail and go see them in Maxwellton, West Virginia. They'd love to welcome you to the family that they're building around their whiskey. Wilderness Trail is sweet mash Kentucky straight bourbon and rye whiskey made by master distiller Shane Baker and fermentation expert Dr. Pat Heist. Whether it is high rye or wheated, cask strength or bottled and bond, Wilderness Trail is always non-chill filtered premium whiskey with unparalleled flavor. Distilled, aged, and bottled in Danville, Kentucky.
It's like, remember Austin Powers? He's like, if you ask me three times, like I have to tell you. What's his name? I'll never tell you. What's his name? Go to hell. What's his name? Fine.
This is episode 310 of Bourbon Pursuit, the podcast featuring news, reviews, and interviews with people making the bourbon whiskey industry happen. I'm one of your hosts, Kenny Coleman, and before we start today's episode talking about Pursuit United, here's your weekly bourbon news update. Heaven Hill just completed a multi-year $19 million renovation and expansion project to its visitor center in Bardstown. Now called the Heaven Hill Bourbon Experience, it features an interactive and educational space with multiple exhibits. This new space triples the existing capacity with more than 30,000 square feet of usable space and can house 900 guests at one time. There is a walking gallery of interactive exhibits that have speaking portraits and interactive screens with a lot of information about John Fitzgerald, Elijah Craig, and many others. The new Five Brothers Bar and Kitchen, located on the second floor, will serve craft cocktails and have bourbon tastings, including a new Five Brothers Bourbon, which is a blend of 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9-year-old bourbons. Lastly is the new You Do Bourbon Experience, where you can go through the entire sensory process, stand in the shoes of a quality control expert, and fill your own bottle of Elijah Craig, Larceny, even barrel-proof Bernheim Wheat, and a rotating option that would kind of be similar to Heaven Hill Select Stock. The doors were officially open to the public on June 15th, and reservations are strongly encouraged, and they can be made online. Now, you've heard me talk about Bourbon Terrace before, but there is now an opportunity for you to do something about it. A group from the United Kingdom wants to put a stop to it, and you can put your name down in support at bourbonalliance.com to put an end to the tariffs on bourbon. And speaking of tariffs, some new data has been released. Lawson Whiting, the president of Brown-Forman, estimates that the European Union's 25% penalty on tariff on American whiskeys is costing the company around $70 million a year in lost sales. Attempts to resolve this will be made at the G7 summit in Cornwall, which Whiting suggests may put just a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. And moving on to bourbon release news. A. Smith Bowman is adding a permanent expression to its portfolio, the A. Smith Bowman Cask Strength Bourbon. Aged a minimum of 10 years with barrels hand-selected by master distiller Brian Pruitt, the A. Smith Bowman Cask Strength will be an annual release, bottled uncut and non-chill filtered. This first release will be available in late June and coming at a staggering 141.1 proof with a retail price of $100. Rabbit Hole is unveiling its highly anticipated single barrel program, where four artists will be selected by Cafe Zamanian each year to create original, limited edition illustrations of each of Rabbit Hole's four core whiskeys. Each artist will create a series of six illustrations that offer a personal interpretation of a theme created for each release. The first 10 barrels in Rabbit Hole's single barrel program will be available to individuals, groups, and on and off premise retailers, but exclusively in Kentucky. To say that we're blessed is kind of an understatement. Back in 2018, when we launched Pursuit Series single barrels, we didn't really know where we were headed. We just knew it was fun to select some barrels and get them out there. And little did we know that we would be heading down a path to create a blend that just won runner-up in the first ever Ascot Awards. Pursuit United is a culmination of over a year of work by partnering with distilleries to create a bourbon that would appeal to a mass market of educated bourbon consumers, kind of like you. And in this episode, Fred asks us the questions on what it took to get here and what the future entails. And if you're wondering where you can get your hands on a bottle of United, they will be available once again, starting in July of 2021 on Sealbox and across retail shelves in Kentucky, Tennessee, Texas, Georgia, Illinois, and Colorado. Stay tuned for more updates, including the anticipated release of Pursuit United Rye. Barrel Craft Spirits is always setting the bar for some of the best blends on the market, using stocks and barrels from around the world. And you can get your hands on some right now without leaving your house. Just go to barrelbourbon.com and click the Buy Now button. With that, enjoy today's episode. And now here's Fred Minnick with Above the Char.
I'm Fred Minnick, and this is Above the Char. This week's idea comes from the archives on a tweet, May 9th, 2019. BJ Smith, or at BWSmith3, asked the question, do people prefer cocktails or their bourbon straight, whether it be neat or on the rocks with meals? That is a great question, BJ, and I'm sorry it's taken me 2 years to answer it, but hey, sometimes that's how Twitter is. Things take a while. But when it comes to food, I think it's a personal preference. I will tell you, in having a wine background, pairing bourbon to food is not as important to bourbon as it is to wine. And I've never really understood that. I've never understood why, because bourbon is a beautiful pairing spirit. There's that sweetness and sometimes the earthiness and sometimes the complexity or the smoke of it can go really, really great with food, especially those of you who are carnivores and like a nice, thick, juicy steak or some ribs or maybe a nice chicken. Or quail. My God, I'm making myself hungry talking about all these incredible foods. But basically, the way I pair is that, you know, the richer, the higher the proof. I like to have a nice, rich whiskey to go with a rich meal. The lighter a meal is, the more I lean toward a cocktail. So I love salad. I eat a lot of salads. That's one of the things that people don't know about me, probably, is that I eat a lot of salads. You can't tell by my pear-shaped body, but I love me some arugula and romaine. I mean, I love a really good salad. And a cocktail, especially with like some soda in there, like a spritzer or some sort, is really refreshing with that. So the richer, the higher in proof and more complex that I like, and the lighter, the more I tend to go with the cocktail side. So I hope that answers your question there, BJ. And I apologize for taking 2 years, but what a great question that was, even if it did take me 2 years. If you're like BJ and you would like to have your Above the Chart question read and answered here on Bourbon Pursuit, just hit me up on Twitter. It's at Fred Minnick, and I'll probably answer it in 2 years like I did BJ. That's going to do it for this week. Thanks again. Cheers.
Welcome back to another episode of Bourbon Pursuit, the official podcast of bourbon. We're back here today. However, we're doing something that we typically haven't done in a while. We did it last time when we were talking about how Ryan and I built Pursuit series.
Yep.
And knowing that we've come through on the next sort of generation of our journey and figuring out what are we going to be doing as a liquor company or a whiskey business, we came out with Pursuit United.
How do we cure our FOMO of limited releases? You know, we just start a bourbon brand and then you start, you know, doing single barrels. And now you're like, well, I guess I'll do a small batch. So I don't have FOMO.
Yeah. And so we'll get into a little bit. And, you know, as I kind of mentioned last time when we did the Pursuit series podcast, it's something that we typically don't like to come on here and do a whole lot of self-serving and self-promotion. Like,
we like asking questions.
Yeah. But it's fun to be able to kind of flip the tables every once in a while. And knowing that we've got our good friend Fred here that is the king of interrogation and interviewing, and he can probably ask better questions than anybody here. So,
yeah, well, it's fun to do this. And, you know, first of all, you know, so everyone knows that this is the company behind this is a separate entity than the podcast. To two different companies. And I am not in any way affiliated with the brand, the Pursuit Series. And so, you know, although we have the podcast together, I don't have anything to do with the whiskey, and people confuse that a lot. They reach out to me all the time and say, "Hey, really like this batch. I really like the United."
Fred, you did so good on this.
I was like, didn't do it. It was all Ryan and Kenny. So it
was all Ryan, and then I helped do spreadsheets. That's right.
Yeah, we're gonna dive into that a little bit. All right. So first, I want to talk about, like, you know, this is a, when we look at the package, this is a, we're kind of veering off from the typical bottle that you had. Let's start there. What's going on with the package? Where are things going?
You know, this is something that it was out of necessity. It wasn't actually something we anticipated on doing. We kind of caught wind about this about a year ago that the bottle that we had been using for Pursuit Series wasn't necessarily being discontinued, but they were no longer going to make it in 750 mLs. And we're like, oh crap, like, what do we do?
This would have been a precursor to the new regulation saying we're going down to 700 exactly. mLs and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But anywho.
So we said, well, we need to figure out a way that we kind of move forward with this. And so it all kind of starts the way that everything starts, is coming down here in the basement, looking at the wall of bottles and saying, what jumps out of us? What's different? And then talking to our supplier and saying, what do you have that could either be similar to this or what looks good? And send us some sample bottles and we'll just kind of get the glass out and look at it. Mm-hmm. And so our designer from Relay Package or Relay Design is Brian. He actually lives just a few doors down. He's been a client of Ryan's for a while for his side, or not his side, his actual businesses. This is the side business, right?
Yep, exactly.
And so he's very, very good at what he does, and he kind of looks at it, and you know, we kind of narrowed, I think, down to two or three, and lo and behold, we kind of looked at the bottle for what we have for our United, and I was like, man, I know I've seen this somewhere. Like, what is it? I got in the basement and started looking. I was like, oh, it's Widow Jane. Widow Jane uses this bottle. I was like, it's perfect. So no wonder we like it, because they have a really good design in what they're doing too. And so we just had to figure out a way that we didn't want to make a direct replica, a direct copy from Widow Jane, but we wanted to make sure that we were different and it stood out for sure.
Yeah, I thought it kind of had a modern, somewhat of a modern feel to it. You see like people changing packages, like Baker's or Weller, they're kind of going more rounded, you know, less like
more curves.
Yeah, more curves, and mm-hmm. you know, just it was a nice blank canvas that a lot of different label designs could work with, I think.
Yeah, so it's also the Senator and the Ambassador uses this bottle, and that was when I first saw it, and that was probably 5 years ago when he started with that one. So this particular bottle has always been a favorite of mine. So the style, I like the style a lot. So good choice on changing the bottle. And, you know,
that thick glass base.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's heavy. And, you know, if you have a burglar come in and this happens to be what you whop them upside the head with,
make sure you go base first on it.
You're going to knock them the fuck out.
It's a great, we liked it a lot because it really shows off the liquid inside. You know, we want it because that's what's important, is what's inside mostly. And it really shows off the liquid really well on the shelf.
And you went with a cork, a natural cork.
We did it because of what you said.
Yep. Yeah.
No, it's actually partly that, partly because I'm kind of with you. Like I've got my aesthetic purposes too. Like I love the way a natural cork feels, the way it moves. Mm-hmm. And we had some, I don't want to say supply chain issues, but they're mostly like my lack of inventory control issues of what we had to do last time. Because when you order dry goods and you order corks and you order custom tops, these take months of lead time to do. And natural cork takes an additional like 60 to 90 days to actually go through as well. And I remember when we were running low on tops from our Pursuit Series, and I was like, oh crap, we need something at a pinch. And we just had to move to synthetic for that quick kind of purpose. Yeah. But knowing that I have a better inventory record keeping ability now, hopefully, fingers crossed, not going to hit that bridge or walk that bridge.
Yeah, well, I mean, it you're also looking at a 200-300-year-old tree. Actually, not 300, but you know, 100-200-year-old tree. You know, it takes a lot of time to, and there's a lot of process that go into them. So I think I love natural cork, and also I think it gives you your best shot for like long term collecting. And I can tell you got a good one. You can tell by the little
you
nod.
Did good, Kenny.
You got a good cork. So
hey, hats off to our supplier. All I did is just put in the purchase order.
Okay, so that's obviously, you know, that's like the aesthetics of it. I'm looking here, and it says it's you basically have a blend of Kentucky, Tennessee, and New York bourbons, but I don't see a percentage on here anywhere. Did you all publish the percentage, or is that out there?
We haven't published a percentage.
What's the percentage of the what you got, Chow?
Well, see, I don't really know if we want to, because it's literally the only part of this that is somewhat
unique to
what we do. Because
I can tell you the mash bills that are in it.
Yeah, we know all the mash bills for all of it, but the percentages is kind of like our unique blend that goes into it.
We went into this like we had been pushed to do a small batch by our broker bottler, and we were kind of getting fed up. Single barrels were just a pain, taking a long time. A lot of effort. And so we were looking for a small batch product, but you know, you're at the mercy of the source market. And so you're like, okay, well, I got MGP, I got Barton, I got Dickel. And you're like, well, that's not, you know, very unique.
Everybody has access to it. And it's
so we were like, you know, we'll do a small batch, but we need something that's, you know, new, something we can make our own. And so our broker had a Tennessee distillery that was making whiskey that's not in Tullahoma, and it started to come of age. And we tried it and we thought, wow, this is really good. The price point was good. You know, I think this would make a great base. It was really good on its own, but it was missing a few components. And we had a relationship with the Finger Lakes people. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? What would happen if I threw some Finger Lakes in there to see?
I was actually very nervous about him doing that too, because I was like, dude, we don't have that many barrels of Finger Lakes. Like, we can't just be playing around with this thinking we're going to scale it.
Yeah, I know. And so Kenny was all about scale. I was all about let's make it the best it can be.
I remember when you were experimenting with stuff, you brought some stuff over to the house.
Yes.
You asked me to taste it. I did.
Yep.
What did I say? I don't remember.
So he said, you rated it like an 83 or something. And I was like, what's your baseline? He's like, Evan Williams Black. And I was like, what do you rate then? You're like an 86. I was like, all right, we're scrapping it, starting over. But at the time, you know, I, with the Tennessee distillery, then New York, kind of liked it just like that. But I was like, you know, we got to have Kentucky in there. And so at the time, the only thing that was available to us was some, you know, 12-year-old Barton, or we had some Heaven Hill barrels. And so I was kind of playing with those, but then you're at the mercy of like the market, and you know, mm-hmm. We wanted to make this economical. We didn't want it to be $100 small batch, you know, mm-hmm. and we wanted it to be in that 55, 65 kind of tier.
Yeah,
and
the price point, this was like you all were always trying to get in a price point where you know, could be affordable, but you still weren't like breaking your bank.
Yeah, we wanted to compete with, you know, New Riff, Wilderness Trail, Rabbit Hole, they've all been successful, you know, had great products in that $55 range. Mm-hmm. You know, so with the Barton and how expensive that was in the Heaven Hill, you know, source stuff, we just couldn't like make it work. And still just the flavor wasn't like all the way there.
I mean, don't get me wrong. We just grabbed like some 1792 foolproof off the shelf and we tried blending with that time and time again.
I probably spent, I don't know how many hours, but months, weeks, tons of time, just every night blending it, making blends. And then, you know, we kind of got to a point where it's like, all right, well, we kind of got it where we want with the Heaven Hill stuff. But then those barrels were coming harder to find. So we're like, we got to find out how we can scale this. And so, you know, we had just reviewed like Chicken Cock, I think, and it was a 2-year ride from, you know, BBC. And I was like, you know what? I bet their bourbon's probably getting close to turning 4. And so I shot Dan, you know, Dan the man. Dan's great. I shot him a message. I was like, hey, do y'all have any whiskey that's coming of age? You know, I'd like to try it. You know, I got this blending project. He's like, yeah, let me get you in contact. And so we went down there, Kenny and I, down to Barstown Bourbon Company. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm jumping too far ahead, but we went down there. They were great. They were excited about the opportunity to work with us. It felt refreshing, like, because when you're in the source market and you're trying to buy barrels, they're always not very welcoming. And they're like,
hold on now. You mean they don't want to talk to you?
Hurry up and buy. Hurry up and buy.
They're just like,
and this is where Kenny dangles. Man, by the way, we're going to get you a Bourbon Pursuit. We're the number one downloaded podcast in the food category. And by the way, we were in Rolling Stone. Don't know if you know about that.
Well, no, they're just like, you know, how many barrels are you going to buy? You know, how much? And we're like, well, maybe 10. And they're like, oh, well, whatever, you know. And then they're just not. And I understand they have clients that will go out there by truckloads, you know, sight unseen and whatnot, but that's, we're putting our name on it. So it's got to be good. And so anyways, Barstown Bourbon Company, they roll out the red carpet. They're like, give you access to our tasting lab. They gave us all these samples and they had some products that were 3.5. I was like, man, this is really good. And the cost, the economics of it made sense too. Mm-hmm. And so the majority of it is, yes, the Tennessee distillery and the Barstown Bourbon Company, and then a little bit of Finger Lakes in there to kind of give it some more chocolatey, more mature, sweet, fruitier kind of notes that you don't get out of the other two.
Full warning to both of you all. This is where you're both going to get very frustrated with me.
I love it.
Over the course of over our friendship and relationship. Now that I don't know the percentage of this, of these blends, I will be like a dog with a bone
all the time.
And it's going to come up in different ways and you're not going to know about it. So I was like, so that was 3 barrels in there of Finger Lakes and, you know, something like that. So you can ask Fred. No,
I'll tell you there's 10 barrels in that first batch and you can guess, you know, at which of each, but we won't tell you.
But so that, you got at least a barrel of the Finger Lakes in there.
Yes.
Yes.
2 barrels?
Don't know.
So we got one right. Barrel.
There's one barrel. There's one barrel of Finger
All right.
Lakes.
So that's one barrel down, listeners. I will continue cracking down until this is
like,
over.
I mean, you really twisted my arm pretty easily there. I was just like, it's like, remember Austin Powers? He's like, if you ask me 3 times, like I have to tell you. What's his name? I'll never tell you. What's his name? Go to hell. What's his name? Fine.
Oh, that's the fun of it all, of course.
Yep. So there is at least one Finger Lakes barrel.
Yes. It is the minority component, but it's for good reason. A little bit goes a long way in a lot of these blends, what we found out. And
yeah, Finger Lakes is a beautiful.
It's
beautiful.
That's what's amazing about blending. And I never would have thought, just like, I didn't know what the hell I was doing, you know. I was fortunate enough that Drew.
I think you sell yourself short. That's one thing. It's why you're the people's champ. I didn't know what I was doing.
Well, I didn't. I mean,
it took a year. I mean,
it took
a year.
And so, like, I mean, I was fortunate that I have a great friendship with Drew Colesveen. He invited me down to do some blending projects with him, and he kind of taught me his process and kind of what, you know, kind of just to give me like a starting point, mm-hmm. you know. And
sure,
we did. We were doing a blending project with like Blackberry Farm or something on a private barrel or private batch for them. And he did tell me, and I don't know, just because we're friends, he goes, they picked this batch, but I thought yours stood out. And that gave me the confidence to like go, okay, maybe I do have something here that I can really,
right,
you know, try to work on and perfect. And so that's kind of where it kind of all started.
No, that's great. And like, so after that meeting that we had, where you dropped off the whiskeys, what changed in the components?
You know, I think you told me like the finish was just not there for it, and I totally agreed. And so the Tennessee distillery component, it has a great, you know, a lot of dried fruit notes, a lot of sweet oak, but it just does not have a finish at all. Like mm-hmm. if you drink it on its own, it's very great front mid palate. And so that's what the challenge was trying to add some spice and some character to it.
Sure.
On the end. And so, you know, the Kentucky component brought a lot of that. Like Barstown Bourbon had some great, you know, caramel, vanilla, typical notes, but it, you know, still at the young age, it had a lot of great rye spice in there and mm-hmm. some spiciness to kind of give it a little bit more robust kind of finish. And then throwing in that Finger Lakes, man, made it just like a nice, give it like a little fruitier orange marmalade kind of profile and little chocolatey notes there on the finish as well. It was just more, it just kind of built as you went.
Mm-hmm. So you all have, you had three distilleries in this batch, or just three different states, three distilleries?
Well, three distilleries. Yeah,
both you could say. It was three distilleries and three states.
Okay. All right. So it's interesting, like, you know, the technique that like Seagram's used to apply, which they were the, you know, America lost its great, you know, blending tradition when Seagram's basically folded in 2000. They used to make sure that every anything had 10 recipes in it. And that's why Four Roses today, you know, they created all these yeast strains to basically compensate for the closure of distilleries. So they, you know, so they would have 10 different recipes inside a batch, you know, so that's why Four Roses has 10 recipes. But like one of the things that you can, you can learn through studying the old Seagram's techniques is like you have a base whiskey, you have a flavoring whiskey, and you have a little bit other things in there that you trickle in. The Canadians, you know, do this all the time. That's why, like, they'll call it the bourbon mash bill, and it will be a bourbon mash bill. That's why, like, Crown Royal got in so much trouble a while back, is because they use a legitimate bourbon mash bill, but they can't call it bourbon. But inside the plant, they call it that. You know, so you all have, I think, without really studying, like, old practices, you applied some old technique to your method. Until barrel bourbon was really, you know, coming out with these various states, you didn't really see a lot, especially this combo. You don't see a lot of, like, New York, Tennessee, Kentucky. I mean, I think that's probably going to be changing, but...
I think the New York one was probably the outlier. I mean, yeah. Easy. I mean, probably anybody that would have expected anything that most anybody comes from, it would be what? Kentucky, Tennessee, and Indiana.
Right.
Like, that would be the obvious one. We just had a really good relationship with you know, Brian McKenzie up at Finger Lakes, and we've really enjoyed the single barrels that we've selected, and, you know, we've started putting down some new makeup there too, and it's kind of just like, God, why don't we, yeah, let's just go all in on this
too. And I think the New York thing brings us, it makes it unique to us, and mm-hmm. It's just, in the whole United story, it's not just doing the same old three-sourced brands to create something. It's something that's interesting and unique, and that's, Finger Lakes gave us the opportunity to do that.
And, you know, I've put their stuff in my blind tastings for years, and they've always done great. And I remember when they were coming out, I did a story on them in 2010 for tasting panel. I tasted their weeded bourbon back then. I was like, holy shit, this is good. So I'd be curious to see if, like, you're able to get any older stocks from that, because they've been on the block for a bit.
Oh, surprisingly yeah. enough. I was like, by the time this is coming out, it might be too late. But yeah, we've selected a 7-year wheat single barrel that'll be coming out of there. But you know,
that's their oldest.
Is that through Pursuit series?
Or that'll be a single barrel. So it'll be a Pursuit series.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, yeah, a lot of their stocks are still coming of age, and he's mm-hmm. been saying, you know, like, oh, you can't buy much off of me right now, guys. You got to wait until it turns four.
It's funny, when they first started distilling, you know, they have a ton of rye, and they have a ton of high rye bourbon, but they made the wheat just kind of like experimentally, and well, the wheat's done better than anything else, so they didn't make a ton of it, you know, 5 years ago. And so they're waiting. There's about a 2-year lag to where the supply is going to meet the demand or whatnot. So it's, we're you know, buying from him, and him trying to, you know, satisfy his own brand. It's, you know, he wants to help us because he sees value in us, and he, mm-hmm. we've kind of helped, you know, give that distillery some recognition. And so it's a win-win relationship, and we're happy to be a part
of it. It's good to see that they respect that, because here's the funny thing is, it's like you're looking at a time where on the horizon, we might see the glut right now. You know, we might start seeing it. There's a few things that are happening in the market right now within the distilleries that are suggesting that, you know, the international tariffs have really hurt bourbon. And all of that 15-year-old Beam stuff, I mean, that's all, you know, all of this aged whiskey coming out in wholesale is really a direct impact of, like, of people not being able to sell their product overseas how they want to. So, you know, those conversations you've had that are a little difficult, you can't get people in the door, they won't, you know, they look at you differently. I think that's probably going to be, you know, changing. And, you know, I really do think, like, companies like yours, these independent bottlers, in a large part are the future of American whiskey. Is we're going to start seeing a lot more of this if whiskey in America is going to continue to grow.
Just don't tell me a glut's coming, because we're getting ready to throw down a ton of money on whiskey.
I'm not saying a glut is coming. I am saying
there's going to be more options.
There are
the source market.
There are some options coming down there, and if companies like yours do not fulfill that and put it out there and are successful, you know, then that's when you will see it. But there are signs that, you know, when you see the larger companies relieving stocks, putting stocks like 15-year-old Kentucky bourbon on the market, which I don't care who you are. If you're a distillery and you have 15-year-old bourbon and you can't figure out a way to sell it for your own company,
hire me.
I mean, what? Somebody somewhere needs to take a look at what's happened domestically. But at any rate, you know, the you all do the blend, you get it in this new fancy package, and then you start your process of selling it. One of the first things that you did that was completely different is you actually did a media initiative. You didn't hire a PR firm or anything like that. You just kind of did it and you sent it out to people. And you were surprised by the positive comments. I wasn't. I tasted it. I thought this stuff was really good to great. And I mentioned if we weren't partners in the podcast, it'd probably be up in my first quarter of whiskeys of the year. But I mean, it's gorgeous. It's got like a beautiful apricot nose. It's got some sweetness to there. I really like the brown sugar I get off of it. I mean, it's a fantastic blend.
I think before we get to that point, we should talk about the moment of like complete distraught.
Spirits of French Lick exploded onto the distilling scene early in 2016 as Indiana's largest double pot still distillery. They employ old world sentiment with new world attitudes, delivering the finest handcrafted bottle and bond bourbons to an audience eager for an alternative to the big guys. And their distiller, Alan Bishop, uses historic Hoosier yeast strains, alternative grains, and 53-gallon, number 2 char barrels to bring you spirits with unparalleled quality and depth of flavor. You can find all Spirits of French Lick's products and new releases on sealbox.com. But don't just take Fred Minnick's word for it. Find out for yourself. Check out spiritsoffrenchlick.com and follow them on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And remember, always drink responsibly. Total Wine & More is ready for summer. They've got all your pours for the great outdoors, like their top 12 wines under $15. And raise a glass to America with a star-spangled selections of sips made in the USA. And beat the heat with refreshing bourbon cocktails. Why not mix it up and serve a brown derby or a peachy keen at your next barbecue? Then taste your way to a new flavorite, like ready-to-freeze cocktail pops and fun fizzy hard seltzers. Lime, pineapple, and peach, anyone? So no matter if you're grilling, chilling, or both, you're sure to find cool prices on over 8,000 wines, 4,000 spirits, and 2,500 beers in-store or at TotalWine.com. Heaven Hill Distillery had 11 different American whiskeys earn double gold honors at the San Francisco World Spirits Competition, including two Best in Class awards. The winners differ in age, type, and style, but the one commonality, the care that went into crafting them. From Evan Williams Bottled and Bond and Rittenhouse to Elijah Craig 18-year-old, their team of American whiskey experts put tremendous care and attention to detail into crafting these award-winning products. For more educational resources and to sign up for their newsletter, please visit heavenhilldistillery.com. And Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Cheers.
We should talk about the moment of like complete distraught and like depression that set in for like a week.
Yeah. Oh, so, whoa. There was, I didn't know about this.
Yeah. So this, I mean, this is all new to and how naive we are to all of this. So, you know, we had our, you know, I'm blending in 100 mls. You know, the most I ever made was a 750, you know, just doing math. And so we're like, Kenny, the spreadsheet master, you know, I'm like, well, if we're going to do 10 barrels, you know, can you calculate, you know, to where we can get it close to what?
Yeah, you got to figure out, you know, the type of barrel, what the estimated yield is going to be to that. What is the proof that's going to come out of there? The ratio of water that you have to add, because you've got some of these barrels that are going at an entry proof 125. Finger Lakes is entry proof at 100. We want to hit, like, we don't even know what the target proof is going to be yet. And so we just know it's got to be somewhere. And so we're just crazy amount of math just trying to figure out exactly what this is going to end up being like.
Yeah. So we kind of had it like dialed in like 100 ml. You know,
why did you, and why did you all want to cut it instead of going cash strength?
Well, for cost purposes. And we kind of want
consistency. I mean, that's consistent. I think that's the biggest part.
And we want this to be like, you know, a whiskey geek's everyday kind of thing. Like, it's something you can have every day, but you can share it with people that aren't, you know, necessarily want high cash strength. It's just something that we want to be more like of a, you know, an everyday kind of common type of drink, not just a barrel proof expression that you're going to blow your palate off all the time. You know, we have those and there's plenty of them on the market and they're great. And we have those with Pursuit Series. All those are uncut, unfiltered, barrel proof. But we wanted this to be more of kind of a staple go-to product.
Think of what you do with Weller 107 and people go crazy for it. I mean, that's kind of like the same thing. And when it comes to consistency and trying to stay out in the marketplace, we deal with a lot of waste when we deal with Pursuit Series and packaging, because we throw away hundreds of labels every single time because a minimum order is 250. You're not going to get 250 bottles out of a barrel on most occasions. So making sure that we can reuse labels, we can reuse everything that we want. And that was the other thing. People have asked, like, oh, are you going to do batch one, batch two, batch three? No, just kind of like, it's just always this. Like,
it'll be inside baseball. You know if it's batch two.
Yeah, but by timing of when you bought it.
But back to the moment of, like, the oh shit moment. So we have it calculated on 100 mls. So we're like, all right, bottler, here's our ratio of barrels. You know, just go make it happen. We're ready to bottle. And so they dump it, you know, and they're like, hey, we're dumping today. And we're like, hey, can you send us a sample bottle just so we can use for photography? We need pictures for our website, this and that. And they're like, sure. So they dumped it. They sent it to us, you know, and we did our website photos. We did everything. It'd been like 2 weeks since we had gotten, two or 3 weeks since we had gotten the bottle. And Kenny's like, all right, all the photos are done. You want to come over and taste it? And I was like, I've been worried about this day for 3 weeks. And so we open it up. We smell it. And I was like, this isn't right. This is not what I created, you know, right off the bat. And then, so we smell it and then we drink it and we're like, it's good, but it's not great. Like what we thought. And then we're in, like,
even good might've been a stretch. It was like, so
Kenny's like starting to, he's like
panicking.
He's like in the corner, like rocking back and forth. I'm kind of like, shit, we got to do damage control. Like, this is our first small batch. Grow with us, you know, like, this might be great, but we're going to get better at blending. You know, I was like, gosh, I effed it up.
I was like, we're not doing media samples. We're not doing anything. We're going to try to, like, throw this thing under the radar as far as we can and just start over.
Yeah. And then, so Lauren, Kenny's wife, was like, well, you know, maybe they just dumped it that day and they didn't vat it, you know, and it's not true with what, you know, the final bottling is. So we call our broker and we're like, what did you do that day? And he's like, I literally just got dumped into it and we just poured out a bottle. Like, I think you're going to like what we just bottled. You know, this was 3 weeks later. So we finally get the finished product that's been vatted, been blended, bottled. We open it up right on the nose. I was like, oh yes, this is exactly what I remember. This is what we created. And then you taste it. And I think, honestly, at a bigger scale, it was much better than what we were doing at 100 mls. And we were just like high five and jumping up. Like, Lauren's like, thank God, Kenny's been depressed for 3 weeks. Like, it's been terrible around here.
What timeline was this?
Oh, gosh. So this was, you know,
probably November.
November,
early December of last year of 2020, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was coming out in January. And so
that makes sense.
And so
I remember you all being a little on edge then.
And so, yeah. And so, you know, you really don't know how vulnerable you are until you create your own small batch of unique whiskeys and send it out to the world and say, let me know what you think. And so we, you know, Kenny and I, we got anyone who's in the bourbon game that we respect and we, you know, value their opinions. We sent them it and we're like, just tell us how it is. And the response was overwhelming. I mean, most of it was just fantastic and it just blew us away. Like, just super humbled by it. Really. It was surreal.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. So you send out the,
but yes,
you,
no PR firm.
No PR just, firm.
No PR firm.
Thankfully, I've kept a Rolodex of emails and people that I've talked to over the past
few
years.
It is, when you are media, it is a little easier to get media. Like, I've experienced that with, like, my books and stuff. It is true. Like, because they're your friends.
Yeah. And we're in a unique position because we've been interviewing the best of the best in the business for 5 years now, or however, 6 years.
Yeah, pretty close.
And so we've learned what's worked and what not worked. And I think given us a, you know, through everyone else, we've had, you know, what we liked and like about releases and whatnot. And so we just had that unique advantage point, you know, going into this.
So you get it out there. What's you start seeing people comment. What are your thoughts?
It's one of those things that we've talked about it enough times off air that it's easy to look at something that's negative and really focus on that and think like, God, how can we make this better? Like, what do we do? And I also think that, okay, by and large, we had a lot of positive feedback. I only focus on the negative ones because those are the ones I remember. So I remember like the first one that I saw that was negative was somebody just said like, oh, this is just an echo chamber of bourbon media. They're all just trying to help hype each other up. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, ah, I get it. Like, I see it. But, you know, we sent this out with no strings attached. We just, like Ryan said, tell us what you think. Like, I don't want to sit here and, you know, try to make something be bigger than it really is when it's something that was really a lot of hard work, a lot of creation, a lot of time, a lot of money investment into it.
A lot of spreadsheets.
A lot of spreadsheets.
The spreadsheet wizard over here is like instrumental to our success.
Remember when he used to send his Google Docs all the time?
Yeah.
I had like,
he stopped sending them to you because you were like, I can't use these.
I can't do this anymore. Please, no.
So you had that one to kind of get over. And I think the other one I saw in like a local group was when it was just starting to come to Kentucky market and the distributor went to a local liquor store. And so the liquor store owner posted on the local Facebook group and says, can somebody tell me about this? What have you all heard? And somebody like came in, they commented, never even tried it, know anything about it. And they're like, it's from bullshit podcasters. It's going to be a shelf turd.
Yeah.
And we're just like, what the fuck? Like, man alive. Like some people, like they just have a nerve. And I remember like immediately responding and be like, hey, if you haven't had a chance to try it, like, please, I encourage you to do it. Like I'm trying to, you know, kill them with kindness, something like that. But I'm very thankful that we also have a lot of cheerleaders. We've got a lot of supporters in our Patreon community that are in Louisville and in that group, and they came to bat. You've got Travis over at Justin's House at Bourbon that said they would only let me order 5 cases. I wanted to order more. And like just having really good friends in this business and having close allies and people that also enjoy your product made it that much easier that you can fight off those negative naysayers relatively quickly.
Yeah. And two, there, you know, a lot of stuff we didn't think about, you know, that people were kind of hung up on, you know, being a blend, you know, they thought it was blended whiskey, not like, not bourbons.
Yeah.
But you know, the TTB requires you to say, a blend of straight bourbons, and so
that's the new bourbon has to be made in Kentucky thing. It's just there's going to be a 5-10 year hurdle for us to get over that.
But that's why I try to educate. I was like, well, everything you drink that's not a single barrel is a blend. You know, it just because it's from one distillery, one state. You know, it's a blend of, you know, hundreds. Well, there's no definition of a small batch, but it's anywhere from, you know, 2 barrels to 1,000 barrels.
And if it wasn't for the, you know, what happened in the late 1800s and after Prohibition with blends kind of taking over the market and damaging a lot of brands, I think you would see distillers use that term, but people like Jimmy Russell go out of their way to say things like marrying, mingling, you know, and it's like they're using every word they can to describe blending, but they won't use blend because it's a dirty term to them. So, yeah, that's kind of going away a little bit, but
we gotta take it back. That's what it has to be. Is like because the hard part, and Ryan even mentioned is that we got a lot of kickback that said you guys need to take blended off the label. Like, no, you cannot take it.
That's
off.
That's actually illegal, Bob.
Yeah, it was like you cannot take it off, and
or they're like you need to tuck it in the back, you know, or something. You know,
he's like you can't do it, and I think it's one of those things that. Just because.
And by the way, I'm glad you can't do it. I mean, as a consumer, who knows? I want to know that. And to me, it's more interesting to see how that New York barrel does than it is to hear about the 1,200 barrels that goes into a batch of Wild Turkey 101. It's very interesting to me.
And that's another thing people got hung up on was New York. They're like, wait a minute, everything I've drank from New York's not been really that good, so I'm not going to try it. You know, and that's. That's probably the frustrating thing.
There's like
about,
500 distilleries in New York now.
That's the frustrating thing about.
So it sounds like you all really did have a lot of upheaval when you all came out with this and pushed it out there, which is, you know, Kenny, I'll put this back to you. How is the like kind of like negative comments different regarding, you know, when it's about the bourbon than when it's about the podcast? How is it different?
The podcast is okay because we come out with a new episode every week. So if you want to yell at us something, just wait till next week and then you'll be back in our favor again. You know, the other thing that we just wanted to be different. We didn't want to be another MGP. We didn't want to be another Barton. We didn't want to be another everything that you can get on the source market. And is it really anything different than what you're getting at? I can name probably a dozen right now. We just wanted to be something that's different and unique. And so bringing in the New York component was the opportunity to kind of have something that is going to be critically different than what anybody else in the market is going to be able to do. The Tennessee place that we got it from, you're going to eventually see more people with that particular product in their blend. We just happen to be, I think, the first on the market, which is kind of cool to say that as well. You know, BBC, granted, we use their product at 4 years old. We thought it was really good at four. They're not actually coming out with their product until it's seven. So we caught a lot of flack at the very beginning of people saying, oh, $65 for a 4 to 5 year old blend.
And I get it. I mean, I've probably said that about others as well. When New Riff first came out, I was like, four-year whiskey. Yeah. But then you try it, and it's a game changer. And that's what we just want people to do is just try it. Because I think once you do, you'll be happy.
Yeah, and back to your question about like how do you deal with the negative comments about it. It's just one of those things that you've got to help kind of continually educate. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was one of the things when we started Pursuit Series. And what was the first thing that we did out of the bat is we came out with a Tennessee bourbon, you know?
Yeah.
And people were all like, oh, dude, what the hell are you thinking? But we didn't think that we were going to go that route. I mean, it was not until after we tried it and we're like, shit, some of this stuff's actually really good if you find the right barrels. And so that kind of gave us, you know, kind of like the will to say, okay, let's keep going. Let's keep going with this. And thankfully that we've got a great, I wouldn't say fan base, but a lot of people out there that also like our taste in whiskey too. And they'll agree with us and they're like, okay, I'll go try this. And by and large, I'd say, you know, we make believers at least 95% of them and they buy something that we've put our stamp of approval behind.
Yeah. So I mean, like an MGP ride, 95% approval.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But we knew going into this, I mean, because we are tater podcasters or whatever people call us, you know, I mean, if anyone knows us, we're just normal people that just have microphones in front of us. But
we
knew that the target was going to be out there. Oh, look at these guys. They're coming out with a 4 to 5 year whiskey. It's $65. You know, come on, give me a break. And you didn't think we knew that
We could have made it more expensive.
We were like, we are not putting something that's going to be half-assed, shitty, you know, out there. Like, I didn't realize how insecure I was till I released this product, you know, because it's like, you know, I'd never get on Facebook. I'm refreshing it every 5 minutes. Like, what's the comments? What's the feedback? You know, if there's a negative or a question, you know, I'm like, well, what did you not, you know, and I welcome all the negative feedback. You know, if it's, you know, if you tried it and you legitimately didn't like it, I'm totally open to it because I want to get better. So I, you know, somebody said, I really just didn't like it. You know, it wasn't me. And I was like, well, what did you not like about it? You know, what are the flavors that are off-putting to you? So I want to know that. So we can get better moving forward. But we knew that going in and we just can't half-ass this. And that's not our personalities. I mean, you know, that's when we're going to do it. It's going to be quality and good stuff.
Well, I think it's very interesting, you know, because this is a very good first blend to put out. It really is.
Thank you, Fred.
It touches on, you know, a lot of things you want to see. And, you know, I know the attention you all got. You got a lot of really good, positive, you know, media out of it. And I was so proud of you two to see what you did and to see how good it tasted. And this is like leaps and bounds better than what you had showed me the first time. And, you know, so, you know, all that effort to me, like this is a good, very good, like everyday drinker potential. You know, that, you know, you throw in that rotation with an Old Forester 1920, a rare breed.
That was the goal.
Yeah. That was the goal.
Yeah, it really was. It was supposed to be an everyday kind of item.
Yeah. And that means a lot coming, you know, from when you taste the real version and gave us, you know, your positive feedback. It meant a lot. You know, it's like, holy cow, Fred Minnick, you know, the Minnick effect, you know, thanks. You know, because even though you're part of the crew, Kenny and I still value your opinion and we look for your reviews and we're still fanboys, you know, still. So to have you say that about us is like, well, it doesn't even feel real sometimes.
You know, it really is. And I really do. I am going to put it in some blind tastings, but I wish I could give it a straight on review. I just can't because we're.
Sure. Yeah, we understand
a little
that.
Too far.
Yeah, no.
We'll just send it to Whiskey
Out. Yeah, we won't give you money, but we'll give you an Amazon gift card. Yeah.
He missed that.
Yeah. We sent it to Whiskey Advocate. Yeah, I like that one.
But, you know, this is something, and I'm not just blowing this up your asses, but this is probably one of the best first blends from anybody I've ever had.
Wow. You know,
that's been put out because blending is hard as shit.
It is.
It is so hard. And that's why, like, I look at barrel bourbon in absolute awe.
Yeah. And, you know, and we've had the benefit, you know, too. It's like stars aligned. We, you know, they've been great sponsors of the show. We've gotten to hang out with them in their labs. And I mean, if you don't think I'm sitting there studying Joe and Tripp, you know, I have, you know, every time we go over there, seeing what they're doing, what their lab looks like, what they're working with. And so, you know, all that's kind of led to this. You know, we've had so much experience being in this podcast and learning from the best of the best and picking their brains. And so it just kind of all came to, this is a culmination of all that right here in that bottle.
So you started off with a great first batch. So what's the second batch? What's it going to be comprised of?
Well, that's the thing, is that this is going to try to be an everyday item and trying to keep the consistency.
Oh, so you all are going to keep this as a main, as a mainstay.
Yes. So this is supposed to be something that we are going to, and I'll just go ahead and kind of tell you the future of what we're going on here. So we will be continuing to make batches for the next few years, targeting around 10,000 bottles a year of this. Hmm. We have our new make contracts already taken care of with Bar Sound Bourbon Company, as well as Finger Lakes Distilling. So we are going to be ramping up production exponentially. So even though we might be doing 10,000 bottles here for the next few years, once we hit 2026 and those barrels start coming mature, we're going to be targeting somewhere around 80 to 120,000 bottles a year. So making it to more states, more shelves, and kind of making a staple product out of it. And hopefully getting to the point, Fred, where you've been saying for years is, when are you guys going to go all in on bourbon? This is going to be the point where we could potentially go all in on bourbon and doing the podcast and doing everything.
Have a ton of whiskey.
If not, we'll have a ton of whiskey, because every year when you got to put down 350 barrels at X dollars time, it gets expensive real quick.
So. Yeah. Well, I applaud you for that. You know, the dream is within reach now, and I'll have to find someone else to do my lawn. seeding and my fertilizing.
They'll still show up. I'll make sure you're on schedule. But it just won't be. Well, it hadn't been me for a while anyway. So.
Yeah, no, it's one of your people.
Yeah.
But no, it is exciting. And thank you again, Fred, for kind of asking these questions and leading us through here. We are excited about where this is going to go, and, you know, starting to work on the rye blend now as well. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be hopefully not too changing process. It's all about key and consistency moving forward. And
that's what we'll have. Pursuit Series will still be our, you know, single barrel line where we can do unique and fun one-off stuff, you know, as they come available. And so that's going to be our fun stuff too.
By the way, this is going to be a fun laugh. I've been wondering why there's a C and a C by the barrels. Like, what the fuck are they trying to say there? And then I saw, like, above the pursuit, it's Cecil plus Coleman. I was like, oh my God, I'm a fucking
the whole
idiot.
Time.
It's this whole time. Face. This whole time I've been wondering, what are they trying to
what
say
is this
CNC?
Code? It's like it's like Da Vinci Code in the bottle.
We should put some more Easter eggs on there, shouldn't
we? That's funny. But yeah, I mean, great job, guys. This is it is I retasted it. It's like, I mean, there's this beautiful brown sugar note in here. And I know that you all have availability through Sealbox. Where else are you available?
Sealbox, Tennessee, Texas, Georgia, and Kentucky.
You're in Total Wine in Kentucky, right?
Yep, Total Wine.
Sold out there now.
Yeah.
It's there, but it'll be for batch two.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of places. And then we're also going to be looking at opening up in Illinois, Colorado, potentially Ohio, Wisconsin. Got a email from North Carolina the other day. Like, you never really know. I mean, right now we will not be able to satisfy the demand for all those states. I mean, heck, Texas alone was like, we'll take it all next time.
Yeah.
So we
told a lot of emails and they're like, we want it for all this region. We're like, well, we'll sell you all the whiskey we don't have. Because that's the thing that stings, is you got to wait, you know, we're at the mercy of, we just don't have enough product to sell. It is what it is.
Well, welcome to the Van Winkle problem, right?
You can only hope that's your problem.
You're a little ways
when up. Ours are going for, you know, $1,000 on secondary.
Yeah, how are you gonna,
I don't even want that to happen, to be honest with you.
I don't either.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen. I'd like it to just stay a good $65 shelf item for as long as we can.
Yep.
That'd make me perfectly
fly
happy.
Fly under the radar.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, Fred, I do want to say thank you again for,
absolutely,
for kind of leading this conversation and asking us about it. It's fun to kind of turn these tables, and it's a fun project of ours, and we're really excited to see where this is going to go in the next decade. Is the best way to put it, because whiskey doesn't come in months. This counts in years. So
Yeah, everything moves slow.
Years and gray hairs and back pain.
Pretty much summed it up right there.
Well, we'll reconvene here in 10 years on this particular podcast and see if we still feel the same about it. Yep.
Actually, save the day.
Yep, let's do it. So thank you, Fred, for kind of taking this along here. Make sure you follow Fred, fredminnick.com, Fred Minnick on Instagram, Fred Minnick on Twitter, Fred Minnick everywhere, and also his show, The Fred Minnick Show. Make sure you also follow Bourbon Pursuit on all the socials. And if you like what you hear, feel like supporting us, patreon.com/bourbonpursuit. With that, cheers, everybody, and we'll see you all next week.